assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.
All glories to Sri Sri Guru.
Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Nityanamani Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nirvasesa Sunyavadi Paskachade Sitarani Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Utapadakamalam Sri Guru Nivarishnavam Sita Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lavita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Panchakalpa Chubhishchaki Pasindavyeva Tapati Janam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
August 10th, 2015, Skype class from Hilo, Hawaii. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 5, Vidura's Talks with Maitreya, Text 21. Bhavan Bhagavato Nityam Samatha Sanugasyaha
Samatha Sanugasyaha
Yasya Gyano Padeshaya
Yasya Gyano Padeshaya
Madishad Bhagavan Vrajan. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. So this is Maitreya speaking to Vidura. Your good self is one of the eternal associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for whose sake the Lord, while going back to his abode, left instructions with me. Purport. Yamaraja, the great controller of life after death, decides the living entities' destinies in their next lives. He is surely among the most confidential representatives of the Lord. Such confidential posts are offered to great devotees of the Lord, who are as good as the eternal associates in the spiritual sky. And because Vidura happened to be among them, the Lord, while returning to Vaikuntha, left instructions for Vidura with Maitreya Muni. Generally, the eternal associates of the Lord in the spiritual sky do not come to the material world. Sometimes they come, however, by the order of the Lord, not to hold any administrative post, but to associate with the Lord in person or to propagate the message of God in human society. Such empowered representatives are called Sakchavesha Avataras, or incarnations invested with transcendental power of attorney. Bhavan Bhagavato Nityam Samatha Sanugasyaha Yasya Gyano Padeshaya Madishad Bhagavan Rajam. Your good self is one of the eternal associates of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for whose sake the Lord, while going back to his abode, left instructions with me. So we have this Upadeshaya Adishat Bhagavan. Upadeshaya Madishat. So there, I got an order from the Lord to instruct you. And Srila Prabhupada talks about how Vidura is as good as one of the eternal associates of the Lord, even though he has an administrative post. And that Maitreya is specifically empowered to instruct Vidura, and anyone who's empowered by the Lord is called a Sakchavesha avatar. So here Maitreya is saying, I'm answering your questions, Vidura, not only just because you've asked, but also because I have an order of the Lord. And we often ask, you know, what does Krishna want me to do? What's Krishna's order? Because that's our criteria for acting, not just what does somebody ask me to do or what does it appear that I'm needed to do in the world. Whatever actions we do in the world are according to how we identify ourselves. And generally, we identify ourselves according to designations or upadis, sarva padi vinirmuktam. We're supposed to become free from this upadi. So if I'm, you know, Canadian and my country asks me to go to war, then I go to war because that's my duty as a Canadian. You know, if my wife asks me to change the baby's diaper, then because I'm a good husband, I do that. If my little brother is walking out in the street because I'm a good older sister, I take care of him, and so forth. And we decide what to do. I remember visiting a devotee's house. They had just moved in recently, and they had a very simple table for eating. And the husband said, well, you know, when you first move into a house, people are fine with you having a simple table. But once you've lived there for a couple years, people expect you to have a big fancy table. So we'll do that in a couple years. So he was identifying himself as a middle-class person of that country, and therefore, as a middle-class person of that country, in a couple years, he was going to buy a fancy table because that's what he's expected to do. So the devotees identify themselves, Jivaraswa, Upaya Krishnara, Nityadasa. We identify ourselves as Krishna's servant, not as a citizen of a country, not as a member of a particular race, not as a member of a particular gender, not as a member of a particular family. We don't identify ourselves, this is, I am this person's child, this person's spouse, this person's parent, this company's employee. I am Krishna's servant. And therefore, whatever may be requested of us in the world, or whatever may be expected of us in the world, according to our upadis, we also check, is this Krishna's instruction? That's our main check. Is this Krishna's order? Is this what Krishna would like? And here, the main thing that Maitreya is doing is giving instructions in Krishna consciousness. So the reason that we, in the followers of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, are engaged in what Prabhupada would call preaching, which, of course, that word has perhaps more and more of a negative connotation. Now the ISKCON GBC tend to call it more outreach rather than preaching. But the reason we engage in spreading Krishna's message, sharing Krishna's message, telling people about Krishna, helping people become Krishna conscious, is because it's the order and the desire of the Supreme Lord. That's the reason why we do it. And as I said, that should be the reason why we do anything. Whatever we do, it's Krishna's giving the instruction, a wife should nicely serve her husband. A husband should see the wife as the other half of his body. A person should have an honest livelihood according to their guna and karma. That we're doing it because Krishna's asking, not because we think we have some duty in the world. So let's look here specifically at teaching Krishna consciousness and how we know that that's the desire of the Lord for ourselves. Well, first of all, we know it's Krishna's desire. It's interesting that Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita gives apparently two contradictory instructions on this point. Of course, Arjuna also accuses Krishna of giving equivocal or contradictory instructions, so we're nicely following in the line of Arjuna by bringing this up. But in one place, Krishna says that one should not disrupt the minds of the ignorant persons who are engaged in materialistic activities. One shouldn't unsettle them. One should simply set a good example. And Srila Prabhupada, in that purport, talks about how the devotees are more merciful than the Lord, knowing the heart of the Lord. In one sense, we can say that even setting a good example is definitely a kind of teaching or preaching. In many ways, one can say that it is the ultimate kind of teaching or preaching. By one's good example, persons will be inspired, even indirectly, and they may also inquire of their own accord. And we all know that a person is much more likely to listen to what we have to say if the inquiry has come from them. Of course, sometimes people inquire insincerely. That's something else. But if a person is really looking at our example and saying, wow, you know, you're so happy. You're so peaceful. How do you do that? Please tell me your secret. You know, I remember when I was working in a government school for a year as part of my doctoral degree, I had to do an internship. And there was a parent volunteer that worked at the school pretty much every day. And near the end of the year, she read an article about me in the newspaper about my connection with the Krishna consciousness movement. And then she came up to me and started asking questions. And she said, there's something different about your eyes, which I thought was really interesting. So people will, they'll naturally inquire if we set a good example, if we set an example of how to do everything in Krishna's service and how to be happy and detached. But still, Krishna is saying not to disturb the ignorant, just to set an example. Don't do more than that. And then at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, the very end, in the 18th chapter, Krishna's final instructions to Arjuna is that for those who teach this science, there is never a servant more dear to me than such a servant. If you want to become the most dear to me, then you become a teacher. And Prabhupada often will refer to this verse of Krishna's, this instruction of Krishna's, saying that especially when you take risks to teach God consciousness, that Krishna will really facilitate your life. So how do we harmonize those two instructions, those two apparently contradictory instructions? Well, one could harmonize them by saying that Krishna's instruction to teach Krishna consciousness is preceded by his instruction only to teach it to those who are not envious, to those who are austere, and those who are devoted. So one could say that to those who are materially attached and not really receptive, that we teach just by example, and to those who are receptive, we teach further than that. Indeed, that is what we do. I know Ravindasri Prabhu likes to tell the story of how Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Vishnujan Maharaj were at their Radha Damodar party. Ravindasri Prabhu also went. Maybe they had an event in Philadelphia. I don't remember the exact venue. And Ravindasri Prabhu asked Tamal Krishna Maharaj, how do you decide who among the audience you're going to spend time with? So Tamal Krishna Maharaj said, well, I go around the group and I ask them, did you like the music? Do you like the food? And if they're very enthusiastic, then I speak to them. And if they're just sort of lukewarm, then I go on. And Ravindasri Prabhu said he decided to test this theory. So he went around the audience in the park, and there was one young man who was eating a plate of prasadam. He said, and Ravindasri Prabhu said to him, do you like the music? And the guy said, oh, it's okay. You know, do you like the food? Yeah, it's okay. So according to Tamal Krishna Maharaj's formula, Ravindasri Prabhu should have ignored this man, but to test it, he spent a lot of time speaking to this man about the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. And what the man said at the end was, yeah, you know, I agree with everything you're saying, but I'm really not interested. I had an almost identical conversation with my mother, who didn't become interested in Krishna consciousness until a few days before she died. So much earlier than that, a few years after I joined the movement, I remember my mother saying to me, so just like when a person dies, their body's there, but they're not there. And I said, yes, yes. I got all excited. And I said, yes, that shows that we're different from the body. And she said, no, I don't believe that. And so those two instructions can be harmonized in that sense. However, we have been asked by our acharyas to go out among the public and give people the opportunity to show whether or not they have an interest. So it's not simply that we set a good example and wait for interested persons to approach us and then teach them in that way. Although that's what happened here, Vidura approached Maitreya. But rather we go out to the public and then we take things further for people who have a taste, right? This taste, this interest is what's given by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu as the first essential qualification for starting Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. So why do we go out to the public and give them the opportunity instead of waiting for them to come to us? So that Prabhupada explains in that purport that we know that Krishna desires that we give this opportunity, but he doesn't want to demand of us something that may put us into difficulty. Right? This is the way that friends treat friends. Right? Somebody will say, well, what can I do for you? What would you like? And the thing that we need or the thing that we would like is something that would put our friend into some difficulty. It wouldn't be something easy for them. So we hesitate to ask them. We want to make sure that they're not doing it out of a sense of obligation, but that they're genuinely willing to do that austerity. So the problem with taking Krishna consciousness out to the people and giving people the option, the opportunity to demonstrate a taste, is that the people who don't have a taste, the people who don't have an interest, may become angry and violent. I mean, we have instances of devotees being beaten, being killed, being arrested, so many things. And we're always taking that risk. Whenever you present Krishna consciousness to somebody, when one takes the initiative to present Krishna consciousness to somebody, we always take that risk that they may not be receptive, they may not have an interest. So what we're doing, though, is giving out a free sample. Just like many companies do that, you go to the market. When we go to the farmer's market, there are many places that are selling different local natural products, honey and this macadamia nut butter and whatever. There's some devotees that sell some health juices that they make, really delicious things. And many of them give out a little free sample. They have a little tiny, you know, thumb-sized cup, and they give out a little sample. So that's what the devotees are doing. We're passing out little samples of bhakti and saying, do you like it? You know, do you like it? So we know that this is very much Krishna's order and Krishna's desire to do this. Some people bring up the point, you know, is it really, are we just doing some religious conversion? Or no, not at all. We're not trying to make Christians into Hindus. I did not join the Hare Krishna movement to become a Hindu, frankly. We're trying to give people the opportunity to love God. It's not a sectarian thing. I mean, a person can make it into a sectarian thing, but that's not what Krishna is asking. That's not the idea of preaching. The idea of preaching is not conversion. The idea of preaching is not our sectarian set of beliefs and rituals are better than yours and you should adopt ours. Our preaching is that you should come to love of God. So this is very much Krishna's desire. And of course, in our sampradaya, in our Gaudiya sampradaya, we find that Krishna's incarnation as Lord Chaitanya is also very much giving us this order. He's saying, wherever you go, whoever you meet, tell them about Krishna. Now, he particularly gives this order to human beings who are born in India, because human beings born in India, it's assumed, already have, one could say, Krishna consciousness in their blood. Just like Prabhupada said about Prahlad Maharaj, that demoniac blood was flowing in his veins. And we see for the Indian populace still, even those who are expats living in different countries, we still see, even among their second and third generation, there's some natural inclination towards spirituality and natural inclination towards personalism that doesn't exist quite so strongly in other groups. Of course, one can say it's also an upadhi that I'm an Indian, and as an Indian, I'm a Hindu, and as a good Hindu, this is my culture. And that's also sometimes true. I mean, many of the ethnic Indians in the Middle East, for example, who've joined ISKCON, have told me that initially their reason for coming to ISKCON was simply that they wanted their own culture. They missed their food, they missed the songs of their childhood and the rituals of their childhood, and this is why they came to ISKCON in a Muslim country. But in any case, we can say, and I don't know how long this will be true for, but we can say that the people who are Indian or of Indian descent do have a natural inclination for God consciousness. Indeed, the Indians are known for this all over the world. So Indians are known for being good at the maths and sciences, as are other people of Asia. But Indians are particularly known for their spirituality. And, you know, for thousands of years, people have gone to India not only for material reasons. You know, they used to go not for the maths and sciences, but for the silks and the spices and the jewels and so forth. But people have also gone to India for spiritual knowledge. When people talk about Eastern religions, they're talking about religions that started in India. And a lot of the wisdom in the world that's not from the Judeo-Christian, Islamic, Abrahamic religions is coming from India. So the people of India are particularly suited for preaching Krishna consciousness. When someone from India takes up this message, takes up this practice, it's much easier for them to imbibe it and much easier for them to realize it. Of course, such is also happening with the children born in our Hare Krishna movement, the children and grandchildren born into Vaishnava families and eating prasadam even in the womb and so forth. They also are natural devotees of the Lord, as Krishna nicely explains in the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. However, the Lord Chaitanya specifically delineated that those human beings born in Bharat should spread Krishna consciousness. He gave it as an open instruction to everyone. So everybody has this, if you want to be a follower of Lord Chaitanya, everyone has this open instruction. Give people the opportunity to take up Krishna consciousness. I mean, we can really say to everyone, just like Maitreya is here saying to Vidura, that I was so ordered by the personality of Godhead to instruct you. We can make that as a definite claim. We can say the same thing to anyone. I have the order of God from Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, from Lord Chaitanya to instruct you. Now, it's interesting that in our Gaudiya line, specifically, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur and his disciple A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada really emphasized this particular instruction of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and this particular instruction of Sri Krishna. Because, after all, there's many instructions given by Krishna which we don't emphasize. We could say we emphasize this one because it's at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. Generally, what a teacher mentions in the summary is most important. At the same time, all of Krishna's instructions are important. But as I say, some we don't emphasize. Krishna talks about going to a solitary place, laying down kusha straw, being 100% brahmachari, just staring at the tip of your nose. We don't do this. We don't find that the followers of Lord Chaitanya in general or in of Bhaktisiddhanta and Srila Prabhupada in particular are following that particular instruction or Krishna's instruction to offer sacrifices to the demigods given in Chapter 3. That's also an instruction that we just simply don't follow at all. I mean, there are instructions of Lord Chaitanya where Lord Chaitanya gets deeply into Raga Bhakti, especially in his later years. And the behavior of some of the devotees at that time are not behavior that we emulate as a general rule. So why these particular instructions are emphasized by Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati and by Srila Prabhupada is very interesting. And it's something that I'm working on as part of another project as far as publishing Raghunath Das Goswami's Mana Shiksha. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Jiva Dharma says that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the path of Raga Bhakti, spontaneous attraction to Krishna, to be explained and put into an instruction manual by two devotees, both of whom were instructed in this regard by Swarup Damodar Goswami. So Swarup Damodar Goswami instructed Vikeshwara Pandit and Raghunath Das Goswami, who each in Krishna's Vraja Lila are Manjari Gopis, and he instructed each of them in different paths of attachment to Krishna. Because Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's own mission is a combination of preaching the Yuga Dharma, the Sankirtan movement, and also going deep into this Raga Marg. Krishnadas Kaviraj says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that Lord Chaitanya specifically says that just this formal worship of Vaikuntha doesn't give me so much satisfaction. And I've incarnated specifically to teach this mood of Vraja. We see that in today's verse also, the word Vraja. Vraja, which means pastures. Krishna has gone to Vraja. So Swarup Damodar Goswami, taking this order of the Lord, that Lord Chaitanya's primary mission was to bring people to Vrindavan. And he explained the higher aspects of sadhana bhakti, bhakti in practice, not bhakti in perfection, but bhakti in practice. But on the raga platform, we know, as Prabhupada explains early on in the Nectar Devotion, there's two kinds of sadhana bhakti, vaidhi and raga. So in vaidhi, we have the 64 angas of bhakti. And in raga, one continues those 64 angas of bhakti, but with a different mood. So this mood and this process of raga nuga sadhana bhakti was given, as we said, by Swarup Damodar Goswami to Vakeshwar Pandit and to Raghunath Das Goswami. So the message given to Vakeshwar Pandit was of a lot of worship and mantras and meditations. The process given to Raghunath Das Goswami, who was a very close intimate of Swarup Damodar, was a little different. It was mostly a purification of heart. It was certainly one of meditation. But we don't find all these explicit mantras and worship that we find in the path of Vakeshwar Pandit. Interestingly enough, it's the path taught by Vakeshwar Pandit to his disciples, down to his grand disciple Dhanachandra Goswami, which is what most Gaudiyas think about when they think about Raghunuga Sadhana Bhakti. And we see some form of this, not necessarily its pure and correct form, but we see some form of the path of Dhanachandra Goswami from Vakeshwar Pandit, from Swarup Damodar, from Lord Chaitanya, existing in the Babaji's of Radhakund. I remember when I was in Radhakund, I met one girl who's a disciple of one of the famous Babaji's there, and she showed me her whole process of sadhana, her whole process of meditation. And it was very much in line with Dhanachandra Goswami. Again, whether these people are doing it properly or improperly is another discussion which I don't want to get into today. But Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati very much preached not the path of Dhanachandra Goswami. In fact, one could say that he even preached against it because of it being done improperly by so many persons. And instead he preached the path of Raghunath Das Goswami. We find that A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, and indeed most of the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, followed this instruction of Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati to preach and teach Raghunath Das Goswami's path of Raghunuga Sadhana. Interestingly enough, it's one of Bhaktisiddhanta's brothers, Lali Prasad, who followed the path of Dhanachandra Goswami, and thus there was a difference of opinion between them. So how does all this relate to teaching Krishna consciousness? Well, that perhaps is one of the most fascinating things. And in this regard, I wish that I had a visual that I could share with you. Unfortunately, I don't. So there's a logo of the Gaudiya Mutt. And perhaps I hadn't thought of this to do in advance, but perhaps those of you who are on a computer, if we can do a search and see if it's actually available. Yes, it is. So if you're on a computer and you do a search for Gaudiya Mutt logo.
Mataji, can you just share your screen? Can I just give you the screen?
I can do that once I pull up the image. Let me just find a good image to share. That one's not so big, so just give me a moment here. These are all kind of small, but sure, we could do this. You can share my screen.
Okay,
and those of you who can't see my screen for whatever reason, if you're at a computer and you type in Gaudiya Mutt logo, then you'll be able to see it. Okay, I'm not going to be able to keep that on. Well, I could keep that on. Let's see how I could do this. Okay, we're going to do it this way. And I'm going to be very creative here. Krishna, oops. Sorry, this is taking me a little bit of time to do this. I should have prepared this from the get-go, but I didn't. All right. Here we go. So here we see how Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati taught that one engages in Raghunuga sadhana and how it's completely connected with teaching Krishna consciousness. So here we have, I don't know, can you see my cursor also? At the top of the logo.
Yes, we see your cursor.
Okay, great. At the top of the logo, you see Lord Chaitanya. There's Lord Chaitanya. And here you see to Lord Chaitanya's, to the left of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chaitanya's right, you see a book called Pancharatra. So the instructions as to how to perform deity worship. And then going counterclockwise on the circle, here you see Lakshmi Narayan on a throne. Then continuing counterclockwise, you have the word Vidhi, sadhana bhakti according to rules. Then continuing to go counterclockwise, you have a bell and you have incense with the word archana, or deity worship. Okay? Then at the very bottom, exactly opposite Lord Chaitanya, you have the words guru and sangha. Then starting at Lord Chaitanya's left, going clockwise from Lord Chaitanya back at the top. So then you have another book. You have the Bhagavatam. Then you have Radha and Krishna. Then you have the word raga. Then you have a mridanga and a printing press with the word kirtan. Then in the middle of the star, it says Om Nam. And in these stars, you have Josh, Shri, Jnana, Vairagya, Aishvarya, and Virya. Now, this was the logo of the Gaudiya magazine that came out every week. And here you see that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati is preaching Vaidhi Bhakti and Raga Bhakti. In Vaidhi Bhakti is particularly deity worship, which is exactly what Srila Prabhupada, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, often talked about, how deity worship was the essence of Vaidhi sadhana. But as far as kirtan and the printing press, those were the path to raga. The Bhagavatam, kirtan, and the printing press were Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mood of raga. And right in the center is the holy name, the guru, and the association of devotees, which are essential for every part of the path. And then what is attained is, of course, enlightenment, opulence, knowledge, renunciation, opulence, and strength. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati very much understood that the way the followers of Lord Chaitanya engage in this raga marg, the way that the followers will enter into vraja, is by teaching Krishna consciousness, by preaching Krishna consciousness. Of course, it's somewhat revolutionary, at least at his time, that Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati equating the printing press with the mridanga and with kirtan. Taking the Bhagavatam, which we have on the right side of the logo, taking the Bhagavatam and distributing it through the printing press. Now, why is it that preaching Krishna consciousness is the way of attaining to rag marg? Because that is what Lord Chaitanya did. Lord Chaitanya had this combination of sankirtan and preaching and experiencing the higher taste of raja. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Radha and Krishna combined. And Srimati Radharani's mood, we could say indeed the mood of all of the residents of Vrindavan, is to share Krishna, to give Krishna to others. It's the opposite of envy. The mood of envy is I want to have something better and more than others. And the mood of bhakti is I want others to have as good or better than I have. So by entering into this mood of Srimati Radharani, by entering into the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, we naturally preach. By teaching Krishna consciousness, we enter into that mood, and as we enter in that mood, we want to teach Krishna consciousness. All right, I want to stop sharing the screen. How do I do that? Do I just click this button? Stop showing screen. Okay. Thank you. I hope that that was of interest to all of you. So if for all these reasons that we have a specific order from the Lord, as said in this verse, Madishad Bhagavan, I have been instructed as so ordered by the personality of Godhead. And the message that we give should also be just suitable for the people. Indeed, this message, if we look at it the other way, not our order to teach, but what we have been taught, the message that we are being taught is also just for us. Like Maitreya's message, it's just for Vidura. At the same time, it's for all of us, which is, of course, fascinating. But it was a specific order from the Lord to Maitreya, not just to teach, but to teach Vidura. So we have a specific order to teach to the people of Kali Yuga, to all the people of the world. And we find the message given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by Bhaktisiddhanta, by A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, it's just suitable for us. They put this, what is it Prabhupada said in his Vyas Puja offering to Bhaktisiddhanta, oldest of all, but in new dress, miracle done, your divine grace. So each of us feel when we read Srila Prabhupada's books, when we read the books of Bhaktivinoda, Bhaktisiddhanta, as I'm studying now Raghunath Das Goswami's Manashiksha with Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary, it really feels like it's given just for us. It feels like it's spoken just for us. There's something, wow, that's what I really needed to hear. It's very personalized. As if the person had a specific message just for me. And as teachers also, the general order is to teach Krishna consciousness and to teach Krishna consciousness for the particular audience, for the particular person, in such a way that people feel, wow, this is just for me. Everything is very personal in our Krishna conscious philosophy. Personalism isn't just some abstract idea that applies to the spiritual world when we get there, but it's something that should be very much part of our lives at the moment. We each have a personal instruction and a personal order. Yes, there's a general order to teach, but it's a very personal instruction for each of us. It's an instruction that following in the line of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Swarup Damodar to Raghunath Das Goswami in his Manashiksha, and is exemplified by Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati in his Gaudiya Math logo, which we can see. We meditate on that Gaudiya Math logo, and you will see that A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada made that logo the whole basis of his teaching and his society. And it's coming to us in a very direct and personal way. And we are to give it to others in a very personal way. This is our instruction of the Lord. This is our mission in life. And that mission in life may appear to others as being a good husband and being a good father and being a good daughter and a good citizen. Like Prabhupada said in his instructions to the Gurukul teachers, that the children should be known as the best citizens of their country. So it may look like that externally, because part of our mission is to set a good example. But really, what we're functioning under is this very personal order of the Lord to share the joy and the satisfaction and the relationship of ourselves with Krishna, and as we do so, developing that relationship ourselves. So thank you. Is there any questions or comments? Your question was, is Prabhupada considered a Shaktivesh avatar as indicated in the purport? Generally, his followers consider him like that. I mean, in this particular case, Srila Prabhupada is defining a Shaktivesh avatar as a resident of the spiritual world who was empowered to come to the material world specifically to preach. So certainly Srila Prabhupada presented himself like that, although mostly in private personal discussions. You know, he had some private discussions with disciples where he said how Krishna told him to come to the material world, and he was arguing with Krishna and saying it's going to be so austere there, and Krishna told him, I'll take care of you. You know, so we have some very private conversations from Srila Prabhupada in that regard, and if someone has the faith and accepts that, and accepts this purport of Srila Prabhupada, then you have to say, yes, Srila Prabhupada is a Shaktivesha avatar. It would be, you know, 1 + 1 = 2. Now, in one sense, anybody who... So you need to cut out that, yeah. Anybody who is empowered by the Lord in the Lord's service has some of the Shakti of the Lord. And we find in the Shastra that the different Shaktivesha avatars, they're often empowered in different ways. Generally, they don't have the full power of the Lord in every respect. So they, like Parasuram, who's a Shaktivesha avatar, he was specifically empowered as a warrior. But he wasn't, so we don't find that he was preaching philosophy. So one may get different Shaktis of the Lord. So that's in a very broad sense, that each of us is given some empowerment in Shakti. We have some of the Shakti of the Lord that we're empowered to use in his service. But generally we don't use the word Shaktivesha avatar that loosely. We use it much more in the sense that's given in this purport, that it's a Nitya Siddha associate of the Lord, someone who's a resident of the spiritual world, who's descended to this world, an incarnation vested with transcendental power of attorney. And that person's birth in the world is not done according to karma. So we differentiate that kind of Shaktivesha avatar from, say, a sadhana siddha devotee, or even a sadhaka devotee, who may still be empowered with some of the Shakti of the Lord. So I hope that's clear.
Mother Emily, you said a lot about Vaidhi Bhakti and Raghunuga Bhakti. So in summary, what are we practicing?
Well, we is a general term. I'm sure that there are people... Well, there are members of ISKCON practicing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, there are members practicing Raga Sadhana Bhakti, and there are members of ISKCON who are not practicing Sadhana Bhakti at all. They're at Sadhya Bhakti, they're in Bhava or Prema. I mean, I hope so, otherwise what's the point? So I'd say that we have members at all of these levels. I mean, Rupa Goswami talks about 3 levels, Sadhana, Bhava and Prema, and then sadhana is further divided into Vaidhi and Raga. Now there's 2 different opinions about Vaidhi and Raga. So some people have the opinion that the followers of Srila Prabhupada are basically practicing Raga Sadhana Bhakti from the beginning of their meeting Srila Prabhupada, because of their aim being Vrindavan rather than Vaikuntha, and of their attraction to the 2-armed form of Krishna playing his flute rather than attraction to Dwarkanath. Although I do know some ISKCON devotees who are more attracted to Dwarkanath. But anyway, rather than our attraction to Dwarkanath or our attraction to Narayana. And therefore you could say that everyone in ISKCON is more or less performing Raga Sadhana. And that's not an unreasonable argument. There's some basis for that argument. However, Srila Prabhupada generally, not always, but generally said that it's consecutive, that first you're going to be performing Vaidhi Sadhana, and that you perform Raga Sadhana once your specific relationship with Krishna has awakened. So anyone whose specific relationship with Krishna has started to awaken, as soon as it begins to awaken, then one is eligible to perform Raga Sadhana. And the way that it will awaken as given by Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati in his logo and is very much preached by Bhaktisiddhanta and by Srila Prabhupada, and which is very much in line with Raghunath Das Goswami's Manashiksha, is it will awaken through kirtan. It will awaken through sankirtan, it will awaken through kirtan, it will awaken through publishing and printing of books, and it will awaken through teaching Krishna consciousness. That is our main means of awakening our particular relationship with Krishna. And then, of course, at the foundation of that is the holy name and guru and the association of devotees. So once that awakened, then one performs raga sadhana. And the main differences between sadhana done in vaidhi and in raga, the main difference is the motivation. So before one's specific relationship with Krishna has started to awaken, one's motivation is a general taste, a general attraction for Krishna, which Rupa Goswami gives as the beginning of any kind of sadhana bhakti, and also one's intellectual and logical conviction based on faith in the guru, in the shastra, and in the sadhus, that this is a rational and cohesive philosophy, and I have some conviction that if I follow it, I will achieve the goal. And raga sadhana, one's motivation is much more, I want to love Krishna in this particular way that has awakened within me. As far as the actual process, the main difference in the process between vaidhi sadhana and ragaduga sadhana is in vaidhi sadhana, one is meditating on all the various devotees of the Lord along with the Lord. And in raga sadhana, one is specifically and mostly meditating on a devotee in Vraja who embodies the same mood that has awakened in oneself. So this practice is explained throughout the books of the Goswamis and throughout Srila Prabhupada's books. So certainly we have members of ISKCON who are at both levels of sadhana, and we have members of ISKCON who have finished with their sadhana and who are at bhava and prema. As far as who is engaged in what practice, it's not that you look at somebody and you immediately know, you know, and that just, it's not, people don't walk around with labels on their forehead, you know. But there are symptoms. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the symptoms of being at bhava bhakti. He gave 9 symptoms of being at bhava bhakti. He said that prema bhakti is very hard to discern because, first of all, the symptoms are hidden, and second of all, the symptoms can be imitated. As far as who's at vaidhi sadhana and who's at raga sadhana, that can sometimes be discerned by a person's general mood and preaching and so forth. But the externals at vaidhi sadhana and raga sadhana are the same. The difference is what's going on internally. And therefore, superficially, one's not really going to be able to tell the difference who's a vaidhi sadhaka and who's a raga sadhaka. Does that answer your question?
It's a wonderful answer. Thank you. That was great. Thank you very much.
I have a question.
Okay.
We are advised to approach best association possible, and when one is, because you say that when one is in those high stages of Krishna consciousness, general devotees, we cannot know that. So how is that going to be possible for one to reach that association? Just by the mercy of the Lord, or how?
I think so. We are told that by the grace of Krishna one gets Guru, and by the grace of Guru one gets Krishna. So it's Krishna who understands the desire in our heart and sends us somebody suitable for us. And certainly we all have association with the highest through Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada is the main Shiksha Guru for all of his society. And not only Srila Prabhupada, so many saintly persons in the line of Bhaktisiddhanta, in the line coming from Lord Chaitanya, I mean, in our Guru Parampara. And we have access with all of them. even though they're not physically present on the planet through their books, through that with Srila Prabhupada, with our Srila Prabhupada, I keep differentiating because in this class I'm talking a lot about Bhaktisiddhanta, who's also called Srila Prabhupada. So we have access with A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada through videos, through audios. I mean, the amount of ability to access Srila Prabhupada that we have is amazing. If you compare it, say, to the Christians, where nothing was even written down until many, many years after Jesus left the planet. And then as far as who we physically associate with, you know, frankly, sometimes it's beneficial also to associate with people who are on our same level. It's said that we make friends with people who are on our same level. And as far as teaching, we teach those who are not quite yet at our level. So all those sorts of association is important. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in commenting on the first verse of Manashiksha, talks about how we're supposed to have rati, or love, for all three levels of devotees, the Uttama Bhaktas, the Madhyama Bhaktas, and the Kanista Bhaktas. So all of them are very valuable. We want to avoid falling into the trap of saying, I'm only going to associate with Uttama Bhaktas, I'm not going to associate with anyone else. I mean, this is something Prabhupada wrote in relation to Siddha Swarup. He said, why do you only want to associate with Siddha Swarup? All my disciples are pure devotees. So one should see that anyone who's sincerely serving the Lord is a pure devotee, maybe unripe, maybe a green mango. But anyway, as far as getting the highest association, we have to say that that is the mercy of the Lord. Because the beginner in spiritual life, the person who's just at the stage of Sadhu Sangha or Anista Bhajana Kriya, just very frankly, such a person is not going to have the ability to discern who is at what level. And they're just not. It's kind of like if you're just an undergraduate freshman in biology, you know, how are you going to tell who's really a consummate expert in biology? You won't even be able to understand really fully what they're talking about. You know, you have to reach a certain stage of knowledge yourself. You know, you have to have a certain expertise yourself in grammar and composition before you can see whether or not someone else is themselves expert. You have to have some expertise in art to judge other artists. I mean, this is, you know, my daughter, who's an expert dancer, she has the ability to understand person's dancing ability in ways that I can't, because she understands the whole science behind it. So as one progresses in bhakti, one becomes more and more and more qualified to understand at what level other people are functioning. But one is enjoined to accept a guru at the beginning when one is not so qualified. Of course, it is for this reason that the GBC and ISKCON have set up their whole vetting and voting process for determining who can give diksha, because they say that the neophyte can't discern. However, the process given in the Shastra is that one depends on the grace of the Lord. And one depends on the grace of the Lord in accord with one's inner sincerity. So it's a question of one's inner sincerity. How much do I want to be cheated? And how much do I want to get the real thing? And if we want to get the real thing, then Krishna will give us the real thing. As Jesus said, ask and you shall receive. Seek and you shall find. And it's perhaps not a popular stance, but we have to say that that's the essence of it. Okay, we could take one or two more.
Thank you.
Can I be heard now?
Uh-huh.
Yeah? Okay, I was going to say, if anyone can hear, that when the wall, when the gate at Mayapur first was built, 75, and then Murlidhar and Purkit and myself went out and painted a logo on the wall. The first thing Prabhupada wanted was that logo. It was a shorter, different version than, I think, than exactly that. It might have been a very similar version of it, though. The printing press, I think, is a little simpler version. But so, in that way, he was showing that he was linked with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's mission immediately as soon as that gate went up.
Wow.
And I'm not sure if it's still up there, the painting, maybe a better version, hopefully, than what we did. But we, anyway, I was going to comment on the Shakti Vesh situation, because Prabhupada would many times quote Krishna Shakti Vinayatar Pravartan, that without the Shakti of Krishna, one cannot preach. So anyone who preaches, or then they are getting the Shakti. Whether you consider yourself an avatar, that's your problem. But but Prabhupada quoted that in reference to himself, and his godbrother Sridhar Maharaj said yes, and he quoted that too, and said, just see, he's preached all over the world, therefore he's Shakti. And sometimes he even said Avesh, because, I mean, you're Shakti Avesh, but whether you're an avatar, but of course there's unlimited avatars mentioned, Avatara Yasankhya, in the first canon, in the third chapter. So many are there. They're unlimited, like the waves in the ocean.
Thank you. Actually, with that logo, the logo that I put up on my screen was the second version in the Gaudiya Math. There was a simpler version that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati had first, and then there was that more complex version later. So Prabhupada may have been using the first iteration of the of the logo. What I'm hoping to do for our publishing of Manashiksha is to have somebody redo the logo with English words and clearer pictures. So that I'd like to have the original Gaudiya Math.
The Devanagari looks good.
Yeah, well, the Gaudiya Math logo had Bengali. But
the one you just showed had the Devanagari.
Had Devanagari, yeah, rather than Bengali. The ones that appeared in the magazines had Bengali.
So you're saying the one that you just showed came out after Bhaktisiddhanta's appearance and disappearance?
It must have, because it was changed to Devanagari. But otherwise, it's identical.
Well, that reminds me, on a morning walk in Mayapur in 74, not during the festival, but later in the year, and Gaur Govinda had just joined. His name was Gaur Gopal, and I'm not sure if he wasn't even initiated at the time, but he started to teach some of us Bengali up in one of the rooms in the Lotus building. So when on the morning walk, Jai Pataka said enthusiastically, said, well, Gaur Govinda, Gaur Gopal, he's teaching everybody Bengali, he's teaching Bengali. And Prabhupada blew everyone's mind. He said, oh, why not Hindi? Everyone was really like stunned, because, you know, probably always throwing at you a zinger and you go, why? And Jai Pataka was like, could barely say anything, but he said, Prabhupada, we're living in Bengal. What's wrong with learning Bengali? You know, he couldn't help but say that. I mean, it seemed like a, yeah. And he said, no, but in India, everyone is speaking Hindi. I think he just said that to blow our minds. I mean, you know, I don't see anything wrong with learning Bengali if you're in Mayapur.
Right.
I don't think he really minded. I just think he was in the mood of just tipping our heads over a little bit.
Yeah, probably.
But,
do that.
So, it is funny. Huh? It wasn't funny at the time. It was just like, what?
Of course, Dr. Chakraswami did learn Bengali.
Yeah. But, you know, and it's funny also in regard to in South India, they don't care about Hindi, you know. There's a lot of South Indian devotees, even in Lashkar, all over the place, and they don't even speak Hindi. And
right, that's right.
You know, it's like, oh, that's North Indian, you know.
Right.
They speak English, but if they're educated, of course, they know English.
Yeah, you'll find that in South India, that their lingua franca is English rather than Hindi. Often they know several South Indian languages. So you'll find people, they know, you know, Tamil and Kannada and Malayalam and English. But yeah, they don't know Hindi. Okay, thank
you. And a lot of Bengalis don't speak Hindi.
A lot of Bengalis don't speak Hindi. That's a fact.
And there's a lot of Bengalis, a couple hundred million.
Well, the book that I'm hoping to publish, Krishna willing, will be in English. And so I was thinking to have a version of the logo. I was going to have the original ones with Bengali, and then which I'm trying to get an electronic copy of, and then have our own version with English, because the book will be in English.
What? Well, you say you're reading the book. It's already been printed.
No, we're publishing it. We're publishing a new, completely new translation.
Who translated it?
Pran Govinda Prabhu translated Bhaktivinod Thakur's Bengali. Hari Parshad translated the Sanskrit of the verses, and Hari Parshad also translated the Sanskrit in the Bengali commentary. Then Krishna Abhishek has gone through and checked all of the Bengali and all of the Sanskrit. So I've had several levels of people involved.
I seem to remember that there's a version by Sarvabhavana, but he doesn't have it complete, or some version I've seen, right?
Well, Sarvabhavana Prabhu has a version which is usable, but I would not call it a literal translation at all. When you compare what we're doing to his, it's considerably different. Narayan Maharaj does have his translation and his commentary. So Narayan Maharaj translated the verses, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary, and then put his own commentary. Narayan Maharaj's translation is very literal. It's very close to what we're doing. But I do see that what he did sometimes, which is the same thing that Srila Prabhupada did, is he will sometimes interweave his own commentary into the translation itself. So we find in Narayan Maharaj's translation, you'll find both in the verses and in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary, you'll find Narayan Maharaj has put in his own commentary therein, in addition to having a separate section for his own commentary. So we saw a need to have a translation that was just a translation. And it's...
Right. Well, Kusha Krata had a translation, which I guess I've been having for quite a while, but there's no commentary on that.
Yeah, Kusha Krata never translated Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Bengali commentary. He just translated the Sanskrit verses. And even then, I could be wrong, but I don't believe he had anyone checking. Whereas what we're doing here is we have both a translator and a checker. And then...
No, he didn't check anything. Everything's got full of typos and mistakes. And whatever.
Yes.
But, so whatever we got, we got.
Right. Well, that's...
I think Purna Pragya goes through them. When he puts out his English versions, he corrects a lot of things.
Right. And we find that with Bhanu Swami, too. He just translates and he doesn't check. And he often has it print, just puts it out there. Anyway, what we're doing now is with a lot of checking. And then as I'm doing the English editing... I'm not a Sanskritist or a Bengali, but as I'm doing the English editing, I'm referring to the same verses other places, and then I often also take things back to Krishna Abhishek and Hari Parshad, and sometimes to Pran Govinda Prabhu, and then we double-check things. So we redid three times the translations of the verses from Stavamala that are particularly in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary on text 9 and 10, because what we realize is that Baladev Vijayabhushan gave a commentary on those verses. And so we then re-looked at and adjusted some of the Sanskrit translations of those verses in line with Baladev Vijayabhushan's commentary. And we did that specifically because Bhaktivinoda Thakur is referencing Baladev Vijayabhushan's commentary in his own commentary on Manushrutis. So it's become a very complex affair. Then after I do the English editing, then Hari Parshad and Krishna Abhishek do another checking that in my process of English editing, I haven't interfered in any significant way with the meaning of the Bengali and Sanskrit, because we're trying to have the Bengali and Sanskrit be as literal of a translation as possible. At the same time, you want to have good English. So it's sort of a dance.
So you'll have word-for-word meanings.
Yes, we have word-for-word meanings. Then also our plan is to have in the book not only the original Devanagari of Raghunath Das Goswami Sanskrit, but also the original Bengali, in Bengali script, of all of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary. So that a person can really see how we've translated the commentary literally. We will also have, this is all Krishna willing, and it's taking a long time, but we'll also have the first ever publication of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Bengali song commentary on the verses. So for each of these verses of Manasutra, Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote both a prose commentary and a song. And we will have the song in the original Bengali, in Roman. I think it's actually going to be in Roman letters, not in Bengali script. So we're going to have that in Roman and then the English translation. Then in addition, we're having the commentary of contemporary ISKCON devotees. So we have some commentary by Bhakti Vigyan Swami, and I'm working right now on editing that. I've almost finished editing the fifth verse of that. He's given a commentary on verses 1 through 8. We have Sachinandan Swami, who's given a commentary on most of the verses. Jayadwaita Swami, who's given a commentary just on verse 6. Shiva Ramar has given a commentary on all 12 verses, though I'm not sure if we're going to be able to get all of those. We may just have some of them. Plus, Shiva Ramaswamy's written an overview of the whole Manasiksha and a summarized biography of Raghunath Das Goswami. In addition, my hope and my prayer is that I am going to write a section about the path of Raghunuga Bhakti as given by Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati and A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And that section is going to be referencing Pranava's book, Bhakti Vikash Swami's book, Narasingha Swami's book, and it's going to be based around the logo of the Gaudiya Mutt. So that's also going to be a big part of the book. Then we have 120 black and white illustrations of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary and 12 full color oil painting illustrations of the 12 verses. So that will be the book, Krishna Willing, with all of your prayers.
Our prayers are with you.
Thank you. So is that all right, Pushkar Prabhu? Any other questions, comments?
Well, I was just going to apologize to many of the devotees. I had to mute about a dozen of you, so... forgive me, sorry.
There's a lot of static and noise on the line. Okay, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Jai.